Hello, welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. We'll be talking about tonight the rewatchability of the MCU. Of course, I'm my co-host, JT from Saskatoon.
Hello.
Also with us is Red Ink.
Yo.
So, this is a topic that came up recently because last weekend I rewatched Infinity War, and I attempted to rewatch Endgame, and I found myself skipping around Endgame, which is really weird for me because I'm not a skipper arounder with movies. I usually, if I watch a movie, I want to be a movie watcher where I watch from beginning to end. I don't want to be the best parts kind of viewer, but with Endgame, I felt the urge to, because I didn't really feel the want or need to sit through it all. And I tried to watch a couple of the other movies, and I realized that the rewatchability factor is not strong. In a lot of them that you would have think would have been stronger. So that's where I'm coming from on this. So this is our topic, rewatchability of the MCU. So JT, when was the last time you tried to rewatch any of the MCU films?
Well, I just rewatched Age of Ultron on this past Sunday, and I was actually thinking of rewatching maybe the first two Iron Mans later on after recording here tonight. I mean, when it comes to rewatchability, especially with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that's akin to rereading comics. Now, I liked Ultimate Spider-Man and large swaths of the Ultimate X-Men comic, basically everything pre-Ultimatum, but the Ultimate Universe large, the only one that I'll really go back to is Ultimate Spider-Man, because that's the best one. At least the first volume of that before they became Ultimate Comics, Ultimate Spider-Man, and all that. And the movies, it's not quite as bad as that. I mean, most of them, you know, if I'm in the mood for, I'll watch The Incredible Hulk, or, you know, I'll give Dark World another go. Dark World's, I enjoy the movie, but it's one that I am not, it's not high on the rewatch list. Like, for me, rewatch something, like, it's got to be fun. It's one that I've had a lot of fun with. So, like I said, the first two Iron Mans. Those two I have a lot of fun with. Iron Man 3, not so much. I mean, it has that cool sequence of Tony Stark breaking into the Mandarin's mansion, finger quotes, with all his kit bash stuff he got from Home Depot. But there's not a lot in that movie that makes me want to come back to it. But stuff like the first Avengers, Captain America, first Avenger, or Winter Soldier, like those, I'll definitely go back to time and again. So, I know. How about you, Red? How much rewatchability is there for you?
Depends on the movie, to be honest. Like, the first Avengers movie, I can't really rewatch it. Yeah, especially, and that has to do with me. I watched it so many times that it's become unwatchable.
Yeah.
And the second Avengers movie, I've only watched it a couple times, so yeah. I'm not a big fan of Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
The Captain America movies I can watch, I enjoy. Civil War, it's almost like a mini Avengers movie. It's not really a Captain America movie. And it's kind of rewatchable, but you kind of end up like just scrolling through it.
You're skipping around.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be the metric we use. Skip, rewatch start to end like a book, skip around, or literally, I only want to watch these 2 to 3 scenes. I think is going to be the metric we're going to use here.
And benchmark.
Yeah, we're not going to go through the whole list, by the way, because the list is fucking long. What I will say is for a lot of reasons, the most rewatchability for me is in the early phases. I love the first Iron Man film. It's almost like a creative accident because it's when Marvel Cinematic just sort of started. I wouldn't say it was a Hail Mary play, because it wasn't, but at the same time, not a lot of people had their faith behind it Jon Favreau was pretty much given free rein to do what he wanted, just a list of characters he couldn't use or reference, and he made the film that started this whole thing, pretty much.
Yeah. It's not fair to call it a Hail Mary, because it's not
it's
like...
Not,
you
know, but it's, but
well,
it's...
I'm...
Okay, go ahead.
I'd say, because they hadn't done anything with Marvel movies before that, aside from, like, the Ghost Riders and the Fantastic Fours. It's that this was a godsend. That would be the proper thing to call the first Iron Man, because this, like, you know, you had somebody with passion behind the camera. You had an actor who not only embodied the character in real life, like, his portrayal has basically, like, this is how Tony Stark should be in the comics.
Yeah, it rewritten Tony Stark for because the Howard Hughes-esque inventor is now gone with the now newer vision of an inventor, eccentric inventor. You know, the one thing I will say is I don't rewatch it all the way through, but I do find Thor fascinating for the wrong reasons to watch over and over again. Because other than Hiddleston's absolute amazing charm and charisma as Loki, that film doesn't have a lot going for it.
I'd say it's underrated. Like, yeah, Hiddleston, but he hadn't hit full
Diva.
Like, yeah, he didn't hit full tilt Diva until we got, you know, Avengers in 2012, and there. A lot was riding on Chris Hemsworth, who was relatively new to, I think, North American moviegoers at that point. Fairly well known in Australia, along with his brothers, because, you know, they'd done a lot of TV and, you know, Australian films. But yeah, it's like, it's that long form version of teaching Thor humility without having to come up with, yeah, so I'm going to kick your ass down to Earth for a spell, and I'm going to make you this lame medical student so you learn what's what. You know, it just stripped him of his power, basically made him human in and of himself, and you went from that. I mean, when you, like I said, I like Dark World. I love Ragnarok. Ragnarok's, like, one of the, like, say, top five films in the MCU that I put it on, I don't skip a blessed second in that movie. And like I said, I watched Age of Ultron, and I had that just playing in the background when I was at work. But if I put it on, like, I will skip to, like, some of the action beats, or where, sorry, I almost called him, like, where Claw's talking to Ultron. And I just like the idea of James Spader and Andy Serkis going back and forth like that. Was just two great actors sniping at each other. But if I'm at home and I'm watching Age of Ultron, I basically skip to the Vision handing Mjolnir to Thor, and the Avengers gearing up and heading back to Sokovia, and just like the whole...
You watch three scenes.
Yeah, like that last act of the movie. And I will say this, Age of Ultron has my favorite image in the MCU, where you do that 360 pan around where the drones are streaming on the Avengers and they're just going to town on these tanker toys. And I mean, it all depends. And it also says some of the quality of film, whether or not it's a rewatch. Like, I love the first Guardians of the Galaxy so much. Again, that's one I will not skip a second in that. But Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, mainly dealing with my own issues in regards to how much I miss my dad and how he left us. When I stopped watching as soon as Yondu says he may have been your father, but he ain't your daddy, because I just turned into a weepy bitch. Because I just think about my dad and I'm off and running. So.
I have a similar feeling when it comes to the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie. Like, I have to skip over the first scene when he's a kid, because it hurts me deeply, because I watched my own mother die of cancer. And that just brings back all those old feelings. Like, when my mother died, I shut everything off. I was in complete denial. As far as I know, we're going back home and stuff like that, but
yeah.
This is an odd time.
And just slight but total complete tangent, I can't watch the last 20 minutes of Wrath of Khan anymore. As soon as Spock mind melds with McCoy, I'm just like, yeah, I'm checking out. But I was going to ask, in terms of rewatchability, is there any movies that you guys, like Ben, what's yours that you just watch front to back, you don't skip a second?
First Iron Man, definitely.
Okay.
Let me just state very clearly that the rewatchability is about different things. The ones that I watch from beginning to end are for different reasons. Completely different reasons. So my list of the ones I watch from cover to cover will be varied in taste and flavor. Iron Man, Captain America the First Avenger, and let's see here, the first Ant-Man, Thor Ragnarok, and Guardians of the Galaxy, I pretty much watch cover to cover.
Now, none of us has mentioned that stellar silver screen performance of Brie Larson in Captain Marvel. I have watched that movie exactly twice. Once when I saw it in theaters, and once when I bought the Blu-ray.
Why would you do that?
Because I'm a completist asshole, and I will own all the Marvel movies on Blu-ray. I don't hate the movie, but it's not one that... It's on the level... It's slightly below Dark World in terms of... I don't hate the movie, but I don't love it the way I like Dark World, and it's part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Also, like Spider-Man, I love... I'll watch Homecoming front to back, but Far From Home, to me, it kind of meanders in spots, and I don't need a Spider-Man movie to be like him whipping zingers and web lines around all the time, but there are parts where I'm just kind of like, I really didn't need that scene where he almost slaughters his entire class because Tony Stark gave him a pair of sunglasses that's a remote control for this killer satellite. I still love the movie.
There's a lot of issues with this. The MCU Spider-Man films have a lot of issues in the fact that they're more to do with the MCU world as a whole with Spider-Man in it versus a Spider-Man film. Now, don't get me wrong. Vulture was fantastic in Homecoming.
Fuck Vulture. I was more scared of Michael Keaton. Like,
yes, that, I mean.
That moment where he's in the
car.
He's talking to fucking Peter. That's scary. That's 10 times scarier than fucking Vulture.
Okay, what was scarier for you, Red? Before Peter knew what was going on, or before Peter saw the gun? Because I honestly, before he has his hand up on the best seat and he's holding the gun in his hand, I was just shitting myself.
Well, even before the gun, I just Red is right. Michael Keaton. When I say Vulture, I mean Michael Keaton. Obviously, I don't mean him wearing the flight jacket and the green glowing eyes. Well, that is frightening in and of itself, but I definitely meant Michael Keaton because, oh my God, the way he did it was just so amazing. In the way that he basically said, "Look, I know who you are. I know you fucked with my plans. I know you took a big dump in my punch bowl, but you saved my daughter, so we're going to call it evens. Just leave me alone from now on, and we're cool."
Yeah.
It's like a moment where people forget. Like, you're shown. You remember, Michael Keaton was at one time a really fucking good actor.
He was one of the most sought after at the point.
Like, yeah. He became like a Nick Cage, where he took on a bunch of dumb fucking movies. That ruined his fucking reputation. But the man was a good fucking actor, and that scene shows it. Like, It's fucking, he's just talking to Peter. It sends chills up your spine.
And another scene in that movie that I really loved the intensity, and it was kind of scary, but not, you know, brown pants moment, the way the car scene was where he lands and the shocker comes back talking shit. And I was like, oh, dude, as soon as he looked at him with, like, that cocky eye, I was like, you are toast in, like, 3 minutes. But it's just the way, like, you don't see it coming until he actually pulls the trigger. But, yeah, and I mean, yeah, he has always been a great actor. And that's, again, something that goes to the rewatchability and, you know, casting of these movies. Like I said, Brie Larson, I liked her in Captain Marvel. She was okay. But I will watch at least the first two Captain Americas, like the first two Iron Mans back to back, and not skip a second, because I don't want to get the angry eyebrows from Chris Evans. Like, that guy is to Captain America as Christopher Reeves was to Superman. Like, you know, and it's kind of hard to say that about either characters, because, you know, any number of guys could have done that, but you just can't think of who would have done it that well. Plus the directors, too, because, I mean, Joe Johnston directed First Avenger. This is the guy that gave us The Rocketeer back in the 90s, and I watched that movie at least every 2 years.
Yeah, exactly, and there's lots of weird directorial shenanigans in some of the MCU movies, which I'm not sure if it affects the rewatchability, but like after Avengers made it big, like there was like a Marvel standard of Marvel movies have to at least be 60% this. Directors can put in 30% that, and 10% is whatever. And it felt like... a great example of this is Patty Jenkins famously fought with Marvel and walked away from doing Thor Dark World. Who was right, who was wrong in that? Who's to say? But what I will say is Thor Dark World is almost unwatchable in a rewatchability point of view for me. Which is a damn shame, because there are good moments in there. But I'm not even, like, interested enough to queue it up just to watch a couple scenes.
Like, Thor Dark World is disappointing for me, because I'm a Thor fan. And it's boring.
Yeah.
And you have one of the greatest actors of our time, and you put him in fucking gross prosthetics and barely give him any lines or scenes.
Yes.
And make him a fucking bad guy.
You're talking about Eccleston?
Yes, it's a huge fucking waste.
Yeah, like I said, there's good ideas, and there's a couple of great performances in that movie, but the product as a whole is just so meh, I can't muster the energy to even pull up a couple scenes, just to enjoy scenes.
To me, that movie comes off as, Loki's popular, so we have to push Loki and make sure that everybody knows about the reality stones and all that stuff, and it's not about Thor at all. Fuck Thor.
And the other
we thing, hired Eccleston. Fuck him, too.
Yeah, the thing is Thor has a lot of villains, and Malekith the Dark Elf is one of the older villains. Could have been fantastic, but Eccleston had nothing to work with, and even though the whole plot is stop Malekith from getting the ether, he wasn't the main villain somehow at the same time. It's like, how the fuck that happened? And
well, he was the main villain. It's just no one cared.
And you had like Thor Dark World dumped a shit ton of Thor lore on the audience as well. Like you see Thor's grandfather, King Bor, show up and played by a pretty good veteran actor too, but it's like, what does it amount to? Nothing. You have the death of Thor's mom. What does it amount to? Nothing. I mean, the only time that paid off was you had a pretty good performance by Rene Russo in the Endgame. Pretty good, but not great. Red's right. Thor Dark World is just not rewatchable.
Yeah.
And it's sort of the same with Iron Man 3. like
Iron Man 3 was a botch.
Yes.
Because I can, when I watch it, I can see what they wanted to do, but they did not do it right.
It felt like they were almost about to commit, but then they stopped and pulled back, didn't it?
Yeah, because it was dealing with Tony having, what do you call it? Like a
midlife crisis?
Not a midlife
crisis. PTSD.
PTSD, yes. And in my opinion, Avengers Infinity War did a much better job addressing that. Because there's that moment where Tony's sitting in Doctor Strange, on Doctor Strange's couch, and he goes, "So what's his name?" Thanos. Finally.
Yeah, he's the guy from New York, and yeah.
And he gets up and he's doing the stretching.
It's not the stretching. It's just the expression in Robert Downey Jr.'s face. Like, he has this fucking answer to this question that he's been mind-boggled with for years. Somebody who's he's never met, never talked to, but somehow hurt him on a deep fucking level. And now he has a chance to fucking finally face that.
And yeah.
Robert Downey Jr. does, like, in just a few seconds, Robert Downey Jr. does an excellent job expressing those emotions. Yeah. And sure, it goes back to Marvel quirkiness, where he stands up and he starts stretching on the fucking vase.
Because he can't let everyone know how freaked out he is, which is, again, something I appreciate about that scene. But to go back to Iron Man 3, my main problem with that is they have a lot of cool little bits in there, but they were so clearly, like, as much as they, like, they started this title Avengers Assemble just after or just before the original Avengers movie came out, where for the first story arc, it was the six movie Avengers trying to stop Thanos from, you know, his kooky spaceman plot. But the same thing with Iron Man 3, that's like the reverse effect of, like, they're trying to put comic books into the movie. So, you know, they shove the Extremis virus down our throats with that movie. And, you know, talk about great actors who are entirely disrespected, like, you know, Christopher Eccleston in Thor Dark World. You got Guy Pearce. Like, the only reason Iron Man 3, in my opinion, doesn't completely suck is the sheer magnetism of Guy Pearce's performance. Like, that guy, even when he's in shit, you can still kind of at least enjoy him. Yeah. And users' results will vary. I'm just
didn't
saying.
Didn't really need him. Like,
well, no. And then you have them, like, all of a sudden. Sorry, I just want to mention. No, I just let me finish quick, Red. And then they force the Iron Patriot. Like, look, I don't care if that was the thing in the comics and Norman Osborn was running the Marvel Universe. We did not need Iron Patriot. Sorry, you go, Red.
They do a ton of references to Marvel movies that do not need to be done. It's almost like it wasn't Jon Favreau directing it. It was somebody else, somebody new. And
Shane Black.
Yeah, Shane Black. And honestly, it's like he went to a comic shop, looked up a bunch of maybe not even looked up a bunch of movie Iron Man stuff, just asked the fucking guy, what's the most popular Iron Man stories? Tell me about
Extremis,
them.
Extremis, you gotta check out Extremis.
Yeah, you gotta do this, you gotta do that.
Yes.
Who's Iron Man's greatest villain? Well, it's the Mandarin. Or the Mandarin. And, okay, we'll have Ben Kingsley play a joke Mandarin, and then we'll have Guy Pearce be the real Mandarin. And
Academy it'll be Award such a winner, Ben Kingsley.
And it'll be such a twist. Ben Kingsley, even though it was fucking fake, revealed to be a joke, did such a better job as the fucking Mandarin than any... than Guy Pearce ever could. Like, he came off as such a fucking goofball.
Well,
and
yeah.
they had to shove AIM in there as well. Ruin that fucking plot thread.
Well,
like, okay, AIM's never gonna come up again, never gonna be a danger because they're a fucking joke in this movie.
The one thing I have to add about that is, and by the way, I totally agree with everything you're saying about Iron Man 3. Just for the audience, Shane Black's history is he wrote and directed the first two Lethal Weapon movies. And it really felt like to me that he was brought on to do Iron Man 3 with the promise of do it like Lethal Weapon. Because don't tell me that's not what it felt like in the third act.
What, you didn't see the Christmas decorations smeared all over this piece?
I said Lethal Weapon, another... not Die Hard.
You clearly missed the office party in that movie, Ben. No, I mean, that's just Shane Black's got his things.
And again, Academy Award winner Ben Kingsley. What I hate is they revealed their whole hand with what's the actor's name that he's playing?
Trevor Slattery.
Yeah, Trevor. You have Trevor reveal like the whole method acting that he was doing for the Mandarin of, you know, part Baptist preacher, part terrorist, part cult leader. And that's what he was doing, and it was amazing, but, you know, don't pull back too much when you do something clever, you know? Just outright stating it.
You shouldn't have twisted it. Like, Ben Kingsley should have been the fucking Mandarin.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he nailed it in that opening part, and that was more in line with the, you know, with Marvel's sliding time scale and the current origin of Tony Stark, which they established in the Extremis storyline as it took place more in the Middle East part of Asia than so we get this more accurate Mandarin. But, you know, you talk about sheer magnetism, like you, America, are you ready for another lesson? Like, just like, yes, sir. You know, I'm willing to learn his performance.
And then you have Guy Pearce on fire with the twin dragon tattoos saying, I am the Mandarin.
Yeah, which is why. And one other thing I wanted to ask you guys, when we talk about rewatchability, like, do you guys care at all about the one shot, like the little mini movies they used to put in the Blu-rays?
I did when they first came out, but then when I realized a lot of them were never going to amount to anything in the actual stories and were mostly there just for
side piece,
I stopped caring real quickly.
Yeah. The only two that really matter, in my opinion, are a funny thing happened on the way to Thor's hammer, which is essentially you can watch that as a precursor to Thor because it's about Agent Phil Coulson on his way to New Mexico to deal with that. And All Hail the King, because, you know, we hadn't seen or heard from, you know, Trevor in a minute. So we get this thing where you see him just like cashing in his infamy of having been this terrorist mastermind. And because up until that point, we're like, oh, great. So we're never going to get the Mandarin. Like, Mandarin has always been one of my favorite Iron Man villains, because I always saw him as this counterpoint to, you know, to Tony Stark, you know, with the whole Howard Hughes aspect of that. And then we get this confirmation in that one that, you know, the Mandarin does exist, and Marvel presumably had plans. I mean, we're finally going to meet the Mandarin in the Shang-Chi movie. You know, I pray to the good Lord that we're actually going to see that movie eventually. But yeah, it's
The Hail to the King I have problems with because that's been almost 10 years now. And it's been the promise of, it's almost a direct response saying, okay, the audience is mad because we didn't have a real Mandarin. We're promising you we'll do it real next time. And as Red said, the Mandarin is Iron Man's most famous villain. The Ten Rings showed up in the first movie with what's his name from Star Trek 2009 as the holder of one of his rings, and
so they changed the origin and the characterization. Like, name me one character in the Marvel universe that they haven't tweaked something like that.
Well, what I'm saying is when Favreau did all the things in Iron Man 1, it's not because he saw it as him laying the groundwork of a universe. He did it because he wanted to tell an Iron Man story. What's interesting is in between Iron Man 1 and Iron Man 2, Favreau was interviewed, and he talked about having the Mandarin show up, and Favreau wanted Mandarin to show up in Iron Man 3. And he even said the whole, he even used Star Wars as an allegory, saying how in the first Star Wars movie, you try to keep most things pretty grounded, don't show too much with the Force, but you're so invested by Return of the Jedi that you don't care when the Emperor starts shooting lightning. And he used that to allude what he had planned for Mandarin for Iron Man 3, and then you had Shane Black do it instead, and we get this.
Yeah, so what's the problem?
It hasn't ruined anything. I kind of wanted to see the Chinese guy with rings on his hands.
That's probably what we're going to get, because part of, if I don't know if you've ever read Master of Kung Fu, Ben, but the whole idea before it became so wildly unpopular to use the character Fu Manchu, not that I'm defending that, it just, Fu Manchu was Shang-Chi's father, so they've simply made the Mandarin, he is now playing, you know, Master Plan, which is another name for Fu Manchu that they've used in the Shang-Chi comics, who, you know, they've adapted the character somewhat. And yeah, I mean, I would have loved to have seen, you know, the Mandarin wearing the Ten Rings going to town on Tony Stark's latest suit, but you know, at least they're doing something with it, and hopefully it should be out this year, late this year, early next year. But
the problem is, it's Tony's villain.
Yeah.
And Tony's not around anymore.
Exactly. It feels like... go ahead, Red.
You can give all the fucking villains of fucking Lion-O and the crew to He-Man all you fucking want. Doesn't make sense.
And you're not going to let that go, betrayal. Are you, Red?
Oh my god, I'm just using it as an example. I'm not attacking you, fuck.
I never thought you were attacking me. I was laughing when I said it. I think He-Man and Thundercats would be a great crossover. You don't. So
let's sidebar that for another day. But Red's absolutely right, because the fans want to see a story about Iron Man fighting the Mandarin. Now we're never going to get it. You know, the fans want to see several different Hulk stories that were instrumental in the Hulk universe, like Planet Hulk. People want to see Planet Hulk. People want to see like a full realization of how the Hulk became Professor Hulk. We want to see a Mr. Fix-It story.
See, what we have, like the Bruce Hulk in the current Marvel universe.
Yes,
that reminds me of the creepy fucking Bruce Hulk from Ultimate Universe, not from Marvel Universe. Like, I remember in the 90s when Professor Hulk was a fucking cool character, because he was a mixture of, he had the temper and the fucking, and like the street smarts of the Gray Hulk. He had the power of the Green Hulk, and he had the smarts of Bruce Banner.
And he always had a giant fist or rocket launcher that only the Hulk could wield as a pistol.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. And he always wore a tank top and pants.
Or a brown fucking stupid suit.
But, yeah.
But the point is how many people would have loved to have seen some Joe Fix-It stories? Or, like, Joe Fix-It show up in a movie a little bit? Or Planet Hulk? The MCU burned through that to do other things, and well, it's because it's
I don't
because, go ahead, Red.
I don't think Planet Hulk is needed. Planet Hulk is a story that you need an extended Marvel universe. Like, it needs to be going on for a long time to do Planet Hulk, because there's a
trilogy
lot
at best.
No, I'm not talking about a trilogy of Planet Hulk movies. I'm talking about there has to be history behind it.
Well, my point of it is. Elements of Planet Hulk were used for Thor Ragnarok, which, by the way, is in my rewatch being an end list. And the reason why Thor Ragnarok is in my rewatch list is simply because it is like a rock musical spectacle as a superhero movie, and I totally dig it. It's not like any of the other MCU movies at all, and it kind of works that way. And all the actors are like on full tilt, and it's kind of awesome.
Oh, by the way, in the next movie, Meek is trans.
Meek?
Yeah.
You talked about the little lizard.
Yeah.
Why does that? Does it, that doesn't even matter? Why what is that? Why does that matter?
No, I don't. Who cares? Completely. When you say, like, you know, what the fans want in regards to the Mandarin, Ben, and in terms of rewatchability, I mean, yeah, the Mandarin is Tony's villain, but there's no reason why the Mandarin can't, like, be the main villain for another hero now that Tony's gone. Like,
well,
you're not, like, and I don't, Ben, I'm just saying, like, yeah, you think it works best that way and they should have gone that way. That's great. Me and a lot of other fans are looking forward to a Shang-Chi. Maybe we'll get a Kung Fu movie from Marvel that we should have got instead of a shitty 2-season Netflix series. Well, but, you know, they made it this way, so let's go with it.
Well, let me put it in terms that people better understand. Let's say there's a DC movie universe that actually is firing on all cylinders. Everyone's happy. And there's this Green Arrow movie, and you're watching this Green Arrow movie, and you find out that Green Arrow's big nemesis in this movie is Lex Luthor.
Doesn't quite make sense, but there's no reason why Oliver Queen and his company wouldn't go up against Lex Luthor. What? I thought of a possible reason why they might have that be them. Why is that wrong? Why is that bad?
It betrays everything about Lex Luthor. Lex Luthor would not have anything to do with fucking with Arthur at all. He hates Arthur. Superman because he believes Superman's an alien invader. The other thing he believes Superman is crippling the human race.
And that's the only motivation that Lex Luthor has, and there's no other possible.
Yeah, that is the only motivation Lex Luthor has.
And then that's extremely limiting.
One of the greatest fucking moments in All-Star Superman is when Lex Luthor gets Superman's powers and he loses them. And he's like, I could have saved the world if it wasn't for you. And Superman said, if it really fucking mattered, Lex, you would have saved the world a long time ago.
I just think that's extremely limiting to say that this is the only way you can do this character.
Oliver Queen's not even an afternoon's worth of attention from Lex Luthor. He just buys his company.
Depending, did you write that movie? You know, maybe the writers would come with an idea. That's the whole thing, Ben. Like, and in turn, going back to the rewatchability, is just because something doesn't make sense now doesn't mean it will not make sense eventually. Like,
you can,
I thought,
like, by that frame of mind, you can make anything make sense.
Yeah, because I was done speaking, so thank you for letting me finish
my
thought.
You interrupt me all the fucking time, and I let you do it, all right?
And I haven't rage quit the recording tonight, so we both have one apiece. My point is, I didn't think it made sense in the beginning for the Mandarin to be the head of this terrorist organization, or even for the terrorist organization, the Ten Rings, to exist, because the Ten Rings belong to the Mandarin. He's got all these funky powers, and he's like this maniacal madman. But over time, as they develop that plot line, all right, this can work. This is entertaining. I mean, they futzed it up a bit with Iron Man 3, but now we're going to get, you know, kind of course correction. We're going to have the Mandarin, the Ten Rings, coming back. He's not traditionally Shang-Chi's villain, but he hasn't always just fought Iron Man. He's struggled with other characters in the Marvel universe, so they're trying something different. I don't see why that's a bad
thing. We're gonna drop the Mandarin thing after I just mentioned one thing. Don't you think it's a little funny, kind of almost hysterical, that you have Guy Pearce do the Vince McMahon moment of "It was me the whole time"?
No, because he was a fucking nut bar, and of course he would say something like that because his plan's gone to shit, and Iron Man's showing him up again.
The sound you were hearing is me slapping my forehead.
I don't think the way you think, Ben. I didn't think that at all.
Before we completely drop this, Red, what do you think? It was me the whole time.
I'm not saying that it can't be done, JT.
All right.
I judging from the conversation, that's what you think I'm trying to say. I'm not saying that at all. It can be done. It's just bad. It's just a bad taste. It's bad cooking. It's like, trying to fuse different types of places like Filipino food with Mexican food. You can do it. It'll taste okay, but it's not going to taste perfect.
Well, if you want perfection every time.
Well, if you're making something, isn't that your goal?
You want to make it the best good? You can. Yeah, I just don't think it has to be perfect every time. It can be pretty good, and I'll still enjoy it.
But back to the movies, like I said, that I'd watch cover to cover. I already brought up why I thought Thor Ragnarok is one of those movies, and it's because it's not like the others at all, and it's like a roller coaster. Red, what do you think of Thor Ragnarok?
Thor Ragnarok is a great movie. It's one of the better Thor movies because it actually deals with fucking Thor. Thor isn't pointing out, oh, here's Loki, here's the main villain of our big movie. It's not pointing out, oh, here's the Infinity Stones. He's not playing second fiddle. He's the actual main fucking character, and they have fun with him.
And he has a character arc.
Yes. A character arc that spans several movies, by the way.
Yeah. And I'm not gonna say you should watch all the deleted scenes, but there's actually a pretty hilarious deleted scene from Thor Ragnarok where you have Bruce Banner eat alien noodles talking to Thor about, you know, saying you're not the god of hammers, you're like Dumbo. And Thor got pretty pissed off saying, stop calling me Dumbo. It sounds like you're just calling me Dumbo. And Banner's trying to explain... Banner's trying to explain about the magic feather. And all I'll say about that plot line about Thor, the character arc of where it's like he goes from being comfortable being the Prince of Asgard, able to have his freedom to go around, be the champion of the people... And confident Mjolnir being by his side and giving him strength, to finding his own strength, becoming the king of the Asgardians, and settling into his role with his trusted advisor and brother Loki and friend the Hulk next by his side at his throne, and it feels there's a great sense of climax and finality to the character's arc there. And I even like the fact that he lost his eye. And while I will rewatch a lot of Infinity War, I have issues with Infinity War and Endgame just from the point of view of looking at Thor's character arc, because he regresses a lot to, okay, I finally found my confidence. Now I can summon thunder and lightning and fly and do all this shit I used to do with my hammer just by myself because I am the god of thunder. I'm not the god of hammers. To, holy shit, I need a hammer. Oh my god, I need a hammer. And then, you know what? I don't like being king. Valkyrie, you be king. It's like a backslide, a massive backslide of the character. And yes, I know there's reasons why, but you get my...
It's not really a backslide for him. You understand, one of Thor's biggest triumphs is learning humility. And that's what the character arc is about. It's a little redundant because they do the 5 seconds of him learning humility in the first movie. But this is him learning true humility. And there's a moment in Infinity War, or in Endgame, where he's summoning Mjolnir and he's standing there and you can see the doubt in his face. Like, he's almost in tears because he doesn't think fucking Mjolnir is going to come back to him.
And then he does the one eye peek.
Yeah, and then it comes back to him, he catches it, and you see this big childish smile on his face. He's worthy. And because he made a mistake, because he didn't kill Thanos, and people ended up dying, like half the universe ended up dying, he's been blaming himself for that. He thought he wasn't worthy. But the fact that he tried his best and is continuing to try his best, even though he's at his rock bottom, that's what makes him worthy.
Okay, fair enough. But you see my point as well, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I see your point that Stormbreaker, bringing Stormbreaker in there, is a little kind of stupid, because they established Thor doesn't need a hammer anymore. And to me, the only reason why he would need to summon Mjolnir is because he wants to know if he's worthy, and that makes sense to me. But creating Stormbreaker, as cool as it is, it's a cool fucking weapon, a cool axe and shit, and makes lightning sparkle all over him and all that shit. As awesome as that fucking weapon is, it is not fucking needed.
Right. It
and that's almost it. Like, it's almost like the two brothers who directed the movie went and gave the middle finger to Taika Waititi and just said, fuck you.
It does feel that way. It really does. And part of it, like I said, there's a sense of finality to Thor Ragnarok. I wouldn't say finality to as there's no more Thor adventures that could be had here, but a finality to the climax of his character arc from cruel and what I would say the first movie, you are a cruel and a wicked boy or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
To worthy king, you know, like I said, that final image of him sitting on the throne with Loki at his side as his advisor and Thor and Hulk standing on his other side. It's a great image that gives you that sense of completeness.
I mean, narratively speaking, I think the only reason they gave him Stormbreaker is, you know, he's okay. Yeah, he doesn't need a hammer anymore, but in that regard, maybe he just needs something to focus, you know.
Well,
he'd only been king of Asgard for like 5 minutes before Thanos blew up the ship.
There is some, you know, I'll even give you some leeway on that, because they did say when Thor showed up in Avengers, Loki said how much dark matter did the All Father have to bring together to conjure you here, and. In the giant dwarf said that the Stormbreaker would allow the wielder to even summon the Bifrost. Yes, so there is some precedent there, and I agree there. But from a pure character arc standpoint, like I said, that final image was fantastic.
Like, now that I think about it, I can actually see why they introduced Stormbreaker and the point of why they did it. I still think it isn't needed.
Yes.
It's because Thor lost everything, and Mjolnir gave him confidence. And that's what he wants, is this confidence back. He's Dumbo with the feather. Dumbo wants his feather back. And that's what making fucking Stormbreaker is.
Yes.
Yeah. And that actually gives one of the reasons why I don't skip anything in end. Like, and part of that is watching Thor go through, like, you know, it's 5 years later. He couldn't deal with the trauma of failing the way he did. So, you know, he's gone full Lebowski. And yeah, he needed his magic. He got the Mjolnir back. But you're also going up against Thanos, who's trying to take the Infinity Gem, so it wouldn't hurt to have an ace in the hole like Mjolnir and Stormbreaker, and then we wouldn't have had, you know, Captain America rising to the occasion, and one of my all-time favorite moments in the MCU.
That's a great moment. Don't get me wrong. That is a great moment. But honest truth is, Endgame is a movie I skip a lot of to watch just 4 to 5 scenes.
I agree with you, and there's a reason for that. It's because Endgame has a lot of fucking more people explain shit?
Exposition.
Exposition, yes. I am fucking brain farting on words all day today. There's a lot of fucking exposition in Endgame, and that's what drags it down.
Yeah.
Like, Infinity War was go, 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 go. We're dealing with, we have all the fucking backstory we need, we just keep going. Whereas Endgame, it's 5 years later, so we're gonna have to explain what happens, we're gonna have to explain time travel, we're gonna explain this and that, and it halts the movie. And You get that. Like, after watching Infinity War, which clearly goes from right to left as far as fast as it can possibly go, Endgame has to stop and explain something to you, and it gives you a jerky feeling. You don't want that.
It's kind of weird because the writing and directing team is the exact same for both.
It's the exact same for both, yeah, but they didn't have. They were dealing with new lore. And that's the big thing, and that's what makes it clunky.
Yeah, it's by the time we got to Infinity War, we knew everything. We had a rough outline of what we were going to expect already just from watching the trailer. So we hit the ground running, and literally hit the ground running. It's go ahead.
There are moments of exposition in Endgame, like where you have Thanos on Titan. He's talking to Doctor Strange, and he tells Doctor Strange his backstory. But they do it in a cool fucking way.
With the reality.
And you're not taken out of the movie. Your will or your ability to drop. Fuck, I'm stalling on another goddamn word.
Suspension of disbelief?
Suspension of disbelief. You don't lose your suspension of disbelief the way you do it, because it's smoothly told.
And I get what they were trying to do with Endgame, and because it does sound cool, revisiting scenes and parts of the earlier movies we love. Sounds cool. Sounds very fantastic. But when lots of scenes feel like reruns, it loses that oomph. A great example of this is Back to the Future Part 2 had lots of repeats of scenes from Back to the Future Part 1, but they did them from different angles, watching them from different corners of the scene. We're doing it from, you know, what did Marty look like when he was playing, if you're watching from backstage? Like, what happens if Marty's watching his dad knock out Biff from across the parking lot versus right next to it? Like, that sort of thing is like an interesting idea of like, revisiting from a different angle, but a lot of Endgame is we're going to show almost the exact same angle. It's or the exact same beats. A great example of this is when Black Widow dies. A lot of the same beats of that scene mirror when the Gamora dies in the previous movie. It's down to the way the music swole and how Clint Barton woke up in the pool, same as how Thanos did. The beats are the same, and it feels weird.
They tried to make it a little different with Clint wanting to sacrifice himself.
True, but I just mean the scene composition of him waking up in the pool and the whole way the music swelled the exact same way at that point. It's weird. It's a weird feeling, and I don't know how to describe it other than the word weird. But
it's off.
Off is a good way to put it. But the other film I want to talk about that I can definitely watch back to front has to be Ant-Man. And I think a lot of that has to do with Edgar Wright's DNA and stamp on that film is still very apparent, even though he left when he did in production. And
he did like 75% of the movie. Yes. You can clearly tell the films that he's like the scenes that he filmed, because Edgar Wright has a specific directing style and a way of communicating to the audience. It's almost like a smooth transition. He's really good at it. And you see those scenes, like one of the best examples is when, what's his name?
Luis.
Luis is talking. And he's telling that story about how he got the name from somebody and stuff, or he got the address to Dr. Pym's fucking place and all that shit. And he goes back and it goes step by step through all the people and in Luis's voice. That's an Edgar Wright theme scene right there.
Yes. And just the fact that it's a Edgar Wright film about Ant-Man, And they're doing a heist, makes it like extremely charming in a weird way that has to be experienced and not explained. And it's something that makes infinitely rewatchable.
Well, but you can also tell the scenes. What? You also tell the scenes that Edgar Wright didn't film, like when Scott and what's her name,
Hope
were sitting in the basement talking and like, oh, I can beat your ass, and no, you can't beat my ass. It's not something. That's not the way Edgar Wright would film that scene.
Right, you're right. It's such a unique film that is charming. I think it's the word I'll use for Ant-Man. It's charming, but Ant-Man and Wasp, not charming. And it's one that, like, I can only think of two scenes that entertain me in that film, but I don't want to sit through the whole movie for two scenes.
Yeah, I love Ant-Man and the Wasp too. That's another one front to back, like you said, Ben. I do like Ant-Man and the Wasp, and it's weird, and I don't mean a disservice to the two films I compare these two in this analogy, but it's like the difference between Ghostbusters 1 and Ghostbusters 2, that both sequels, like Ant-Man and the Wasp and Ghostbusters 2, they just try so hard to recapture the magic that the first film had. And to a large degree, they, you know, succeed. They're not horrible films, but they just don't have that whatever fairy dust that the originals had. Because, I mean, you look at Ghostbusters, it's these two guys were this very blue-collar thing with this high science, and they're fighting ghosts. And Ant-Man, like I said, it's a heist film. And there's just something inherently fun and freeing of watching a heist film and watching all the dominoes fall and how stuff is set up and such like that. And that's like when you look at stuff like, again, the first two Captain America movies I watched front to back, and they're very different films. Like Joe Johnson, like I said, did The Rocketeer, and it's got that sweet Indiana Jones kind of magic to it with the setup and the Nazis and, you know, the wild and wacky adventures that Cap and the Howling Commandos have. And then you have this transition into what is essentially a Marvel version of, you know, because you had what's his name that played Alexander Pierce in the film? Redford?
Yeah, Robert Redford.
Robert Redford. It's Marvel's version of 3 Days of the Condor. It is this 1970s kind of pulpy espionage thriller with Marvel superheroes. And that's why I love the Winter Soldier so much, because you have this world building, you have these sharp twists and turns, you have Cap kind of doubting himself a bit because of everything that's going on. You know, does he's a man out of time, and he doesn't quite fit into the modern day. You know, he's still obviously got feelings for Peggy, even though she's 1 foot in the grave, not to be insensitive to the character, but, you know, he's also got a shot with his sexy blonde neighbor who turns out to be a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent that's been bodyguarding him this whole time.
And Peggy's niece.
Actually, an article the other day talking about, you know, what's your preferred viewing order of the Marvel movies? And the person that wrote this article went off in a bit of a tangent. It's like, well, then he starts sleeping with the daughter of his former girlfriend. And I was like, you clearly weren't paying attention to what was said in those movies, sir. But yeah,
and the other thing, like I said, is it's just something that is really weird, because Infinity War isn't one I rewatch often beginning to end, but it's one I can rewatch beginning to end. Endgame, not so much. It's now one that I cannot rewatch at all, because I don't think it had enough cool scenes in it. Is Black Panther? Did I enjoy it when I watched it the first time? Yes. But am I in a big hurry to rewatch it? No. And have I tried rewatching it and stopped? Yes.
Yeah, that's one that I enjoyed it very much the first time I saw it. I've watched it two or three times since, but it's one I'll start watching it and then I'll hit pause and I'll go, you know, do my laundry, run to the store, I'll come back and watch it again. Like, not that I think it's a bad film, but it's one of those movies I will watch it front to back, but I have to be in the mood. I have to be ready to make that commitment, you know, 2 hours of my life to sit and watch a movie. Not that I think I'm being forced to. It's just, it's a great film. Just not one that I'm off to sit down and watch the whole way through. You know, same thing with, you know, looking at the list of the other Marvel movies here, like Doctor Strange. I love that movie. But it's like Black Panther, you know, visually striking. There's a lot of awesome shots in there. It's just, it's a start and stop when I watch that film.
I actually can find myself rewatching Doctor Strange more than Black Panther, because Doctor Strange feels divorced enough from the MCU that it doesn't have to, it doesn't, it feels like you don't need to do homework to watch it. It's a story about one man clawing from being dragged to nothing to something again. And there's something about that story that's interesting. And Cumberbatch does an awesome job as Doctor Strange. Lots of performances are top notch. It's one I've kind of forgotten about. It sort of slipped through the cracks. I don't think about Doctor Strange unless I haven't rewatched it. Maybe I should try and see if I can go through it.
To me, Doctor Strange is one of those movies that I didn't watch back to back, but I take a break. Like, it's not something I watch all the time, not something I want to watch all the time. It's just, I'll look at a list of movies that I have and say, what do I feel like watching right now? I'm bored. I haven't seen Doctor Strange in a while. Well, maybe I'll put it on, watch it. And I enjoy it. It's a good movie.
Yeah.
But Black Panther, like you said, that's something I can only watch in pieces. I can only watch certain scenes.
Yes. It's another thing against Chadwick Boseman, by the way. I just want to make that very clear, because people are going to say, oh, you don't look black. No, he was a great actor in that film. It's just,
he did. In my opinion, he did a much better job in Civil War.
I totally agree there, because there was such a maturity and finality to his character. Like when he chokes out Zemo and he says the living aren't done with you yet. There's something very chilling about that.
Yeah, because I mean, it's also because the film is supposed to take place like a couple weeks after Civil War, and it's not backpedaling, but they have to build him back up over the course of the movie to where we saw him in Civil War, even though that, you know, that movie takes place after Civil War. It was confusing, to say the least. But I don't know. It's like, again, Chadwick Boseman was a great actor. I've seen a lot of his films. I'm not knocking his performance. I'm just not in a rush to watch Black Panther again.
Yeah.
I mean, if you know, you look at some of the films coming. Sorry, you go, Red.
Deathmonger was a great villain, and honestly,
Killmonger.
Killmonger, whatever. He's a good villain, and I honestly wish they didn't kill him off, because he could have been the next Loki, if done right. Or they could have done the Masters of Evil, and he would have been knock it out of the park member of the fucking team of Masters of Evil.
He would have shanked Zemo 2 minutes in and taken over the whole thing. I mean, looking at the you know, the future little list of future Marvel movies here, I mean, I haven't seen the film yet, but because I like Shang-Chi comics and Kung Fu films, I'm going to say at least Shang-Chi is going to probably be a rewatch for me. Thor, Love and Thunder, and... well, definitely the Fantastic Four whenever that freaking happens. But until I know more about what's going on, I'd say Spider-Man, because Spider-Man's my favorite Marvel hero. But until I know a little bit more of what the plot actually goes into, I can't really say whether I'd want to rewatch that. You know, it might end up being Far From Home more than Homecoming.
Spider-Man is the MCU Spider-Man movies are weird for me, because I forgot which YouTuber it is, because it's one I don't agree with often. But he did say one thing about the Spider-Man MCU movies are good superhero movies, but they're not good Spider-Man movies, is what he said. I think it's a sentiment I actually agree with. I want to see like a Spider-Man movie that is just a Spider-Man movie cover to cover. And you know, there's all these rumors going around now, and we'll find out what's real and what isn't real as more press announcements are.
They've been debunked.
I know, that's what I'm saying, but people are still pushing him.
People are like, oh, it's going to be a multiverse movie. And Tobey Maguire literally tweets out, nobody's contacted me about this, so whatever you're saying is fucking bullshit.
The rumors got so insane that like a week before Tobey Maguire debunked this shit, he said, you know, there was this rumor saying, Tobey Maguire is acting like a diva on set with Andrew Garfield. And it's like, and then all of a sudden he's like, no, nothing's happening. I don't know what you're talking about. And what I love is people are saying, oh, no, he's only saying it because of an NDA. He's not allowed to avow it. And I'm like, you guys are idiots. This is up there with the whole, Disney is exploring reshooting the sequel trilogy.
No, you're stuck with him. Get over it.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, the whole, you know, conspiracy theory of that, you know, he said that and he might be part of Marvel's plan.
Don't give it credence. Do not.
Okay, first of all, I'll give credence to whatever I fucking want to. And I said, it's interesting. It could be real. But I agree with you guys. It probably isn't.
Tobey Maguire agrees with us. Come on.
But again, that could be all the part of the plan. I'm just saying it could be. It couldn't. We'll find out when we see the movie.
The problem with that rumor is that it's a really good idea. And that's why people want it to happen.
Yes.
But it's not happening.
Because Amy Pascal is allergic to good ideas. The other thing I want to add to this is, I'm not sure if it's true to this day, but after Spider-Man 3 did not perform well, it still performed extremely well financially, but Tobey Maguire outright said, I will only do another one if Sam Raimi's on board again. And that was decades ago. And don't know if that's still true, but I'm just putting it out there that he did say that. And who knows what might have happened since then, because Arnold Schwarzenegger said thinking about the Terminator films before James Cameron told him, look, Arnold, just take the paychecks. I don't care.
I'm taking the paychecks to promote the movies.
yes. James Cameron
is the greatest.
James Cameron
is the greatest movie I've ever seen. It's a true sequel, as far as I'm concerned.
James Cameron is one of the greatest actors that people don't know about, because that acting he did in those promos is just amazing. You almost believe he cares.
I've never believed anything that man has said in the last 15 years.
But they keep on going back to him saying, hey, we want to make another Terminator film. And he's like, okay, how big's the check? And it's only a 5-minute promo? Okay, fuck it, I'm in. It's who's to say how the new movies are going to be? But like I said, the rewatchability, it's like I have like 4, maybe 5 films I'd watch cover to cover out of how many, guys? How many films is it?
21.
Yeah, it's. I mean, what's your number out of them? What's your cover to cover number? About 5?
Five or six. I mean, I love the Incredible Hulk movie. I really do, but I pretty much just want to see like the where he breaks Harlem and we hear the voice of the Incredible Hulk, Lou Ferrigno, yell Hulk smash. That's pretty much the only, when I go back, I skip a lot and I watch that whole last fight scene.
That's not a cover film then.
No, it's Iron Man, Captain America, Iron Man 2, Winter Soldier, The Avengers, Guardians Volume 1, and, you know, and Ragnarok. So that's 6 and, so 8, and then Endgame, Infinity War, and Endgame. How about you, Red?
For me, it's first Iron Man, just going down. I need to see the list of the Marvel movies.
Okay, I'll give it to you right now, man. Let's see here. Where's the cursor?
Definitely the first Iron Man, Red.
Yeah.
What's just quickly, what's your favorite or one of your favorite moments from that film?
My favorite moment is probably when he's fucking testing out the rocket boots for the first time. It's like, okay,
face first in the wall.
We're gonna start at 4% power. Boom, clicks it. Boom, he just goes fucking flying back.
And then dummy douses him with fire extinguisher.
Yeah. I think my favorite moment is like, how'd you fix the icing problem?
Might we'll look into it. But go ahead.
Still listing my
yes
picks there. So Iron Man, Captain America: First Avengers, Winter Soldier, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1, Ant-Man, Captain America: Civil War, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Spider-Man Homecoming, kind of. There are times where I skip it and some like skip scenes, but sometimes I just watch it right through. Thor Ragnarok for sure. Infinity War for sure. That's about it.
All right, well, that's all our lists. All right, so we'll talk to you guys next week. This is our show for the night. This is your host, Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Reading.
We'll say goodnight.
So long.
Peace out.